So I think everybody here is too young to remember the 70s, except me, because I'm old. In the 70s, there was a self-esteem therapy system called EST, of all things. And it was a very, very strange system, because you would go to an EST meeting, they would lock the doors so nobody would leave, and then they would yell at you for 2 hours, and this was supposed to improve your self-esteem. And every time I close the door getting ready for class, I have a little flashback and worry if I'm about to run an S session and damage your self-esteem by yelling at you for an hour and a half. So I apologize in advance if you end up leaving this place worse than how you came in. That is honestly not my intent. So, but look up S. It's a symptom, it's not the cure. So the midterm is on Wednesday. This is the second midterm. If you did great on the first midterm and you want to throw this one away, you can sleep in. But I have the feeling that most of you are in the position where you really want to do better on this one than you did on the first one. And if history is any indication, traditionally people do worst on the first, and then much better on the second and improve after that. So at least statistically speaking, that's how it tends to go in this course. Happy birthday to the M&M. Speaking of people that will yell at you, but depending, it might make you feel better or worse. Felicity Jones, who finally won her well-deserved Academy Award. Evel Knievel, who literally broke every single bone in his body except one of the little bones in his ear. Rita Hayworth. Mike Judge is the inventor of a show called Beavis and Butthead and other animated things like that. Believe it or not, Mike Judge was a physics major at University of Texas. So if you're a physics major, this may be your career doing odd screwball comedies. And Randall Munroe, who's actually a local, he graduated from CNU in physics a decade ago, and also is the author of XKCD, which is a very popular, very geeky internet comic. His birthday is today. So happy National Pasta Day. It's really a pity that Wednesday is not National Mulligan Day and it's today. If you don't know what a mulligan is, look it up, particularly used in the context of golf. So in going over things, today is mostly review. I'm going to talk a little bit, very briefly, about center of mass, but we're going to come back to it again for rotational motion, because it's center of mass and mass distributions is much more important for rotational motion. Today, mostly what I'm going to do is it's an all request Monday, and I'm going to solve any problems that you throw at me and try and talk you through how to solve them. The first three bullets here are the bullets that we covered kind of in the first midterm. That does not mean that you can forget them because you are already tested on them. It means that you build upon them. So don't be surprised, just like in some of the homework problems, you had to go through and then use forces to calculate kinematics and then figure out how fast a box was moving or how far it moved or whatever at the end of a particular problem. You will build on that knowledge. On the other hand, if you need an equation, and I don't have it written on the cheat sheet, which I'll show you in a second, by all means, ask us or look it up. It's open book, open computer. Okay, so don't feel like you are constrained by just what I put on the cheat sheet, as that is the only information that you will need to know at all to solve all the problems, because that's not how it works. So we covered all the Newton's laws. We covered work and energy, including friction and frictional forces, and energy dissipated to friction. We covered conservation of energy and conservation of momentum, and elastic and inelastic collisions last week. So all of this is fair game. I mean, this is the material over the past couple homework sets that you should study, and that you should look at other problems similar to those in those problem sets and be ready to address them. I mean, frankly, it might not surprise you that at least some of the exam problems will come straight out of the homework sections in the textbook, out of problems that I have not otherwise assigned you. So if you're really, really interested in getting a feeling for exactly what will be asked, you know, get a copy of the textbook or grab a copy upstairs in the Learning Center. Take a look at the nature of the problems. Huh? Or just get the online copy, because I think it's available through Mastering. At least I get a copy. But some of the exam problems will look very similar to those. They will not be worded word for word, because you can look up the solutions to these on Chegg, and I won't let you do that. So, darn, I thought there was, okay. Are there any questions about what's on the midterm? This is the second midterm. Is there what? Ink? There's, believe it or not, I do not have a bit of ink yet on me. My girlfriend loves ink, however, and she keeps on bugging me to get some. So no ink yet. At least not that I've seen. Any other questions? Okay, so as far, because that's the material, I mean, it's really funny, as I was writing up this cheat sheet, I was thinking to myself, I don't really have that much to write on the cheat sheet. Because there are a lot of things that are conceptual. Conservation of energy, conservation of momentum. Okay, the definition of momentum I could write up there. But a lot of what we've covered in this section of the course is technique on how to apply conservation of momentum or conservation of energy. Right? A lot of things that you've seen so far are not plug and chug, kind of like they were with kinematics. You know, once you set up the problem, you just plug in the numbers and go. It's a little bit more involved than that. It also means for the exam, setting up the problem is 90% of the credit, right? And you will get docked a point here or there if you don't use significant figures, if you don't use units, blah, blah, blah. That's just how it works in the physics course. But most of the credit will be given to you just from setting up the problem. Yeah.
Will the exam contain problems from the last exam's material as well?
No. So there will not be a problem that is strict kinematics. There may be a problem like some of this homework where you're working out, I mean, I've got an example right here that I'm about to work through where you're figuring out the forces and energy of a block moving up a ramp, and at the end you ask, how fast is the block moving? Okay, that's fair, because it's a force, and F equals MA, and A goes back into kinematics. But it won't be the entire problem is a throw the ball up in the air kinematics problem. Okay? There is, and I tried to include the four, you know, kind of the accounting versions of the different energies in here. Energy loss to friction, spring stored energy, those formulas I had given you in class, and we had used them when we solved some energy conservation problems. There were a lot of questions, and I think I'm going to go over in class a bit. There's some questions in particular about how one calculates work in general as force applied over a distance, and that little vector operator, that dot product there, implying that there's actually, you have to measure the angle between the force and the distance that the object is moving. Because in a lot of homework problems, you were noticing, hopefully, the force was perpendicular to the direction the object was moving, and so the work done by that force was zero. And you could almost answer it right away. So far, so good. So before I get into a spring problem, and I'm going to work that out in a second. Let me work out one problem from the homework that was a class request, at least a request by one of your esteemed colleagues here. And this is problem 6.63 from the homework, which was a suitcase being pulled up a ramp at a certain angle of 32 degrees or whatever. By a given force, 160 newtons, so somebody is grabbing onto the suitcase and pulling with a constant force, nowhere in the problem do they say that the velocity is constant, right? They say the suitcase is moving, But the suitcase is accelerating, most probably, by application of this force as it's pulled up the ramp. You're given the mass of the suitcase. You're given the coefficient of kinetic friction because the suitcase is moving. And as it's moving, you can figure out what the force of friction is. And you can figure out also, they also give you how far the thing moves up the ramp. So let's say 3.8 meters, quite a distance. So and then given the scenario, given this picture, they ask you a lot of questions about work, right? How much energy had to be put into the suitcase from these various sources. Basically, I mean, this is very, very similar to filling out our accounting table for all of our conservation of energy things. It's just the individual cells of that accounting table. And then the final is the final total. So remember that work applied by a force is equal to that force dotted with the distance, or the force times delta x times cosine theta, the cosine of the angle between them. Right, so part A is fairly straightforward, right? The angle in between them is zero, right? Because the force and that distance, delta x, here, I'll put a delta in there instead. Oops. So the work is equal to the force times delta x. You can figure out what that is, right? 3.8 times 160 newtons. Because the cosine of the angle between them is 1, right? The cosine of 0 degrees is 1. Right? So that's part A, simple enough. The work done by gravity, okay, well, the force of gravity is mg. Gravity is a force, Todd, right? Gravity is a force. So here now, the question is, what is the angle between them, angle between the two things? And here, that angle is 32 degrees. Here's the force of gravity, mg. Here's the normal to the plane, and here's the direction of dx. So there's 90 degrees, there's another 32 degrees. So this is 90 degrees plus 132 degrees. Whoops, 32, not 132. And so the work is equal to mg, that's the force, times the cosine, oops, times the distance between, distance the thing moves, 3.8 meters, times the cosine of 122 degrees. Now what you'll find is that this cosine of 122 degrees, is it positive or negative? It's negative, okay? So this is positive up here. I'm putting work, you know, I'm putting positive, doing positive work on the suitcase. This negative thing here means the gravity, you know, work done on the mass by gravity is negative. Gravity's fighting me. So this thing will end up being, you know, less than zero, which is still fine. Work can be positive or negative. But again, it's just simple application of this formula of what work is, force applied over a distance, and the component of the force that's in the direction of the distance. for the normal force, okay, here's our normal force. What's the angle between the normal force and the displacement? It's 90 degrees, right? The normal force is pointing up there. The dx is pointing there. That angle is kind of by definition, if you're moving along an inclined plane, 90 degrees. The normal force is even kind of defined. Not kind of, it is defined as being perpendicular to the surface of the plane. So theta equals 90 degrees. And that means the work is zero. Cosine of 90 degrees is zero, right? So, and later on, in other homework problems you did, man, it worked on like a pendulum and stuff like that, and asked, what's the work done by the tension on the rope in the pendulum? And that's another classic example of where the force is always perpendicular to the displacement, right? Something swinging on a rope, the displacement is always along the arc, and the force is always towards the center, which is perpendicular to that, even though they're always changing together. The work done by that tension, assuming the rope doesn't get longer or shorter, is on as well. If the rope gets longer or shorter, there is work being done. So what's the force of friction in this case? Right, so for part D, at least, we have this guy is sliding up the hill. This is mg. The normal force, using our vertical components, the normal force is equal to mg times the cosine of theta. Cosine of 32 degrees now. A different theta, right? This is the angle of the... And let me call this theta the angle of the ramp, just to be very clear that it's different than these thetas over here. So the normal force is equal to this. The force of friction is equal to that normal force times the coefficient of kinetic friction. And this acts down the plane. Friction always opposes your motion. So what's the angle between the displacement and the force of friction? 180, right? So that's 180 degrees. Whoops, 180 degrees, which means the cosine of theta is equal to minus 1. So the work done by the friction is minus the force of friction times the displacement. And you can figure out, you know the weight, you know the angle, you know the coefficient of kinetic friction. Right? Mg cosine of 32 degrees times 3.8 degrees. Oh, this is negative 1. Yeah. I put little tails on my 1s and 7s. I write them like Europeans do. Yes, you should. Thank you. Absolutely. Use of k should be in there. Yep. Thank you very much. Because that's the normal force, right? The normal force times the coefficient of friction times the displacement. Yep. Unfortunately, just like accounting, it's all in the details. Thanks, Stephanie. Because the details do matter. Stupid units. So you can add together all of these things, and you can get the total work done. Now, there's... And some of the work you know, on the suitcase is positive, some of it is negative. The work that I'm applying by pulling the thing is the energy that's kind of going into the system. And it's going a few different places, right? It's going into friction. It's going into, well, I don't have to worry about the normal force. And it's going into friction, and it's going into some gravitational potential energy as I lift the suitcase up vertically. The rest of it's going to go into kinetic energy. The last part of the problem is a problem that you can solve two different ways, right? The last part of the problem says, and I didn't even write it on here, what is the final velocity of the suitcase? Now this is illuminating because I could do this a kinematics way. I could write down all the different forces acting on this suitcase in the x direction. And one is my pull, and one is the force of friction, and one is the force of gravity. Right? And use Newton's second law, F net equals ma. So part F, you know, there's a part F I could use F equals ma, F net equals ma in the x direction. And then I can use kinematics to get the final velocity, right? Because I've got the acceleration, and it's constant acceleration because it ends up being constant forces. And I've got the total distance traveled, and so I can use V final squared equals V initial squared plus 2A delta X. Yeah, it says from rest. In the problem, it says from rest. So you know the initial. Okay. But the other way that you can do this is you can also use conservation of energy. And say that all of the rest of the energy has to be in that object's final kinetic energy. If you already did the math, what's the total work I did on this object in part E? And you already, okay, I accounted for friction. Okay, I accounted for gravity. Okay, I accounted for other stuff. Where else can that energy go that's left over? It can only go into kinetic energy of the object. So I can get right to the final velocity, rather than having to go through the kinematics and remember my kinematics. You can do it both ways. You'll end up with the same answer both ways. You better. Yeah, you can do that.
When I wrote it all out, I said, oh, it's a mass the same whole way.
Yep, and that's fine, right? So, but this is, this contains a lot of good pieces. Right. In particular, this really contains a lot of the definition of work, the definition of how energy is transferred by a force on an object that's moving. Right, and it all depends on the angle between the force and the object, the direction, the displacement, the object, displacement of the object that's moving. And conservation of energy you can also apply and finally get to the last answer without having to use kinematics. Which is nice. So are there any questions on this particular problem? Because this has lots of guts and conservation of energy stuff. Yeah?
For part B, when you use the angle, is there any other way to get that answer without doing it that way?
Right? I feel
like you can find the angle.
So there's a slightly different way to do it that will end up giving you the same number. And that is you can use, oh, I know the energy, gravitational potential energy is mgh. And I can figure out the height that it has to move, which is actually delta x times cosine theta. You end up using the same angle again in the system to get that height. It ends up being the same answer either way. So you can do it mgh, or you can do it via the definition of work. Either way, better give you the same answer because it's the same thing you're talking about. Did that answer your question?
I'll talk to you.
Okay. So are we good with this one? I'm going to get to a different conservation of energy and momentum problem in a second. But first I want to ask you guys, do you have any... I'll go into that one, and then I'll give you time for requests from the homework. So, and all of these boards are, of course, posted to the class slides afterwards. So the one problem I didn't get to last class, but I wanted to because it's kind of a standard problem. And it's phrased a lot of different ways in the literature. It's what's known as a ballistic pendulum. It actually, for you military types, this is something that you use to calculate what's the muzzle velocity of a gun shooting a bullet. Now, you're not going to go in without super fast photography. You're not going to go in and measure, oh, that bullet traveled this far in this time, because it's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles an hour usually, right? So how do you figure out the muzzle velocity of a gun or the velocity of a bullet if you don't have a good enough stopwatch and a good enough eye to measure it? And the way you do it is you take the bullet, you shoot it into something, and you see how it deformed that something or how it moved that something, how the kinetic energy of that bullet was translated into other energy, in this case stored in a spring after it hits a block. And the block moves. So what you can all, yeah, thermodynamics is tough for this one. Thermodynamics is really complicated because then you have to measure the temperature of the block and blah, blah, blah. It's really uncertain. This is the best way to do it. So, and even though I was mentioning velocity, even though I was mentioning kinetic energy, you should look at this problem and you should now be aware that something is deforming. Right, the bullet is going into the block, and energy is being dissipated to deform the block. So, and you can't calculate that energy easily at all, like you could with the suitcase on the ramp. So you can't use conservation of energy. This is a classic inelastic collision problem. And you therefore have, only thing you have is conservation of momentum. That's it. Okay? So I'm going to copy this problem real quick or sketch the problem. I've got a block. I've got a bullet in the block that went in. And this thing is going to hit a spring and move the spring. And this bullet is, let's see, this total thing is 4 kilograms, and the spring constant is K. So in what we're trying to do, oops. So what we're trying to do is the mass of the bullet is 8 grams. Or 0.008 kilograms, right? The block, the mass of the block is 4 kilograms, which is much, much bigger than the mass of the bullet. And the compression of the spring, this spring is going to compress by a distance delta x, and that's given to be 8.7 centimeters. Which is, Chris, how many?
No. Oh, yeah.
0.087 meters.
70 centimeters.
Right, okay. And the spring constant of the spring is 24,000 newton meters.
Yeah.
2.4 times 10 to the third newton meters. Okay.
So far, so good.
Now, does the entirety of the phrasing of that problem...
Newtons per meter. Sorry, thank you. Yes, it is.
Otherwise, units don't work out. Newton meters is a... doesn't work. So, and what is the... what is the initial velocity of the bullet? Okay, so you note deformation of block. Which means that this thing is inelastic.
Which means I can't use conservation of energy, so I better use conservation of momentum.
So the initial momentum, and let's say this is the x direction, the initial momentum is the mass of the bullet times the velocity of the bullet plus the mass of the block times the velocity of the block initially, which is zero,
right? And now we're going to use...
And this is not energy during the collision. The bullet and the block.
Just because energy is not conserved in one collision does not mean... that it's not conserved later in the problem. In particular, when I'm compressing the spring, as I'm compressing the spring, energy is conserved. So I have to break this down into two kind of sub-problems, right? I have to break this down into... after these things hit each other, then there's going to be this V final. And then those two are going to be moving together, and then they're going to compress the spring. So the V final
is now the block and the bullet are together, and they're moving with that final velocity, V final. And this is equal to the mass of the bullet times the bullet's initial velocity. This is conservation of momentum. This is one equation right now that I have. But I have two unknowns. Right? That V of the bullet initial and the final velocity of both of them together.
So I can only get part of the problem by applying conservation of momentum to the initial collision. Now what I can do is I can say, oh, all of the energy of that moving system goes into compressing the spring.
So then you can apply conservation of energy during the spring compression. Right, so the initial energy is all just kinetic energy. The spring isn't compressed at all. The initial energy is 1/2 the mass of the bullet plus the mass of the block times that velocity final squared.
Right?
just before I compress the spring. On the final energy, you look up on the cheat sheet, what's the stored energy in the spring? It's 1/2 kx². Okay. And the masses are not moving. If the masses aren't moving, there's no kinetic energy from them. So conservation of energy, all this kinetic energy had to go into stored energy in the spring. So this gives me, cancel out the 1/2, mass the bullet plus mass the block, times the V final squared is equal to K delta X squared. This lets me calculate the V final. Everything else here is known. And after I calculate the V final, I can put it back in here and calculate the velocity of the bullet. And this illustrates one of the hard things about these conservation of momentum and conservation of energy problems, is that they are movies that don't just have two frames, right? You are counted on to supply a middle state, and you are only going to know where to draw that dotted line, that little red line, and say, oh, conservation of momentum applies over here, but not conservation of energy. And then over here, conservation of energy applies. I don't really need conservation of momentum. And there's an external force being applied anyway that keeps this thing from slipping. So conservation of momentum doesn't apply over here, but conservation of energy does. Okay? Tricky, tricky. But getting that experience is only given by solving these types of problems and by working through that narrative and understanding that you can draw the dotted line in the middle and treat it as two separate pieces of a larger problem. And that is the hard part for these types of problems. And I admit, it's not trivial until you're used to it. So overall here, let's see. So you get that you can get the final velocity of the bullet and block combination and then work your way back to the bullet. These types of problems, this type of system is actually often called a ballistic pendulum instead, because in the old days, and I'll doodle it real quick, but then I'll erase it. It's not really that informative. Instead of a spring, what people would do is they'd fire a gun at a block, and the block would be a big piece of wood hung by two strings or something like that. You'd fire a bullet into this thing, and this thing would swing up a certain amount. And you can do the exact same thing here. That big block of wood swinging up stores a certain amount of energy and gravitational potential energy now, and you need to work out the angles and the length and all of that stuff instead of the stored energy in a spring. But it's the exact same principle again. You break it down into the bullet coming in, a snapshot here of a moment before this pendulum moves, where you can figure out its initial velocity at the bottom of the swing after the bullet has come in, just like the initial velocity of that block. And then you can start applying conservation of energy as you take that kinetic energy that you just got and store it into potential energy somewhere else, whether it's a pendulum, whether it's a spring, whether it's friction. Maybe this block is on a friction surface, and you measure how far this block goes, and you know the coefficient of friction. All of those are perfectly fine, but all of those are standard kind of ballistics problems that you may or may not see again. Does anybody have any questions from the homework? If not, go into the center of mass real quick and let you think about it. Yeah, okay. What? Quick. Yep.
Can you do 6.98?
No. Of course I can. Sure, yes, I can do it. let's see, 6.98.
Ah, 6.98 isn't even in the book. I have to go to the website to get it. Let's see. Ah, 6.98. Oh yeah. Be careful doing the tension. This is a good one. Okay. Yep. So 6.98 is a mass. And the pulley here, and another mass hanging off here.
And this is 20 newtons and 12 newtons. This is the problem, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yep, okay.
So,
and I even gave you a caution in this problem because it is a good chunky problem, right? And that there is so part A is find the tension in the rope or the cable.
Part B is for a displacement of 1.8 meters or 1.2 meters, calculate the total work done.
So let's say these things get displaced 1.2 meters.
Calculate the total work done on the 20 newton block.
And that's total.
And then part C is calculate the total work done
on the 12 newton block, also total.
And then part D is calculate the total work done
on the system. Draw a line here.
So remember, your standard definition, work is equal to, force times that displacement, or F delta x cosine theta.
Between the two objects. So I'm going to draw some force diagrams because I need to figure out forces on these things. So the force diagram on the 20 newton block, he's got a normal force up. He's got a mass 1g pointing down. Let's see, this is block one and this is block two. So this is the force diagram for block one, and he's got a tension pulling on him.
They don't say anything about friction. They say the pulley is light and frictionless, and they say that the no frictionless force on the block sitting on the tabletop.
So this is like a chunk of ice sliding on another chunk of ice. This is it in terms of block number one, in terms of a force diagram. Block number two, in terms of a force diagram, it's going to have the tension pulling up, 12 newtons, and it's going to have, mass 2 times g, right, that 12 newtons pulling down, and that's it. One of the other things it says is that these things are moving. Are they accelerating? We don't know.
The problem does not state that these things are moving at constant velocity. They say they displace, they say they move. It doesn't say anything about acceleration, so you cannot assume that the acceleration is constant. And as a matter of fact, it's not, right? It's, or there isn't a constant acceleration, maybe, but it's not zero. So let's figure this out at least. So Newton's second law. Let's apply Newton to these. Newton. Certainly the block one is not moving up or down, right? So in the vertical direction for block one, that just gives me N is equal to M1G. That's kind of easy. In the horizontal direction for block one, and the acceleration in the vertical direction, I forgot the jump, is equal to zero. The block is not, block one is not accelerating up or down. In the horizontal direction, F net is just the tension, and that's M1 times A sub X, the horizontal acceleration. That's just Newton's second law. F net is equal to mass times acceleration. So the tension is equal to the mass times the acceleration there. But by gosh, if there's constant tension, there better be a constant acceleration. For block two, in the y direction, F net is what? Is the tension minus M2G, right? One force there, that's it. What's the acceleration? M2A sub y. But now we can also notice that a sub x is equal to a sub y. You know, kind of this is a sub x1 is equal to a sub y2, really. These two accelerations have got to be the same. These things are moving tied together. So I want to find the tension. This is two unknowns. This is two unknowns. So I need to solve this for the tension at least. To figure out this A, use X1 to find A is equal to the tension over M1, and plug that into there. And so this tension minus M2G is equal to M2 times this thing, the tension over M1. M1 times this tension, just multiply everything through by M1. M1, M2G equal to M2T. So M1T minus M2T is equal to M1, M2. Or T is equal to M1, M2 divided by M1 minus M2. Oh, there's got to be a force in there. There's a G in there. There you go. Units work out, right? These masses cancel one of those masses. I'm left with an mg. But it is not as easy as saying, oh yeah, the tension is 12 newtons. Because as this pulls down, the tension is actually different. And the tension is actually, well, this M2G is the 12 newtons, right? So M1 divided by M1 minus M2. So M1, 20 newtons divided by 8 newtons, 2.5
tension is 2.5 times that weight.
And I think I got this right, right? M1 minus M2. But what you do is you know, getting to this point gets you 90% of the credit, right? Setting up the equations. And then all the rest is math, all the rest is algebra and solving it. So far, so good. Yeah?
Can you do 8.3?
Huh?
Are you done with this one?
No, I'm going to do B, C, and D, too. I was just, that's part A. That's just part A, right?
What was the tension?
I mean, if you plug in the numbers, at least, I think the tension is...
Oh, there should be a plus instead. There is, let's see, is that right? Is that tension? Oh. Ha ha ha. Okay.
Good caveat. I made a mistake here. Stephanie, are you about to add?
No, I was just going to ask, can you treat that as a whole system and find the acceleration that way?
Yeah, you can do that too, absolutely. Right? Yeah, but that doesn't give you the tension.
Yeah, because acceleration goes to things, you can just do tension times mass times.
Right, exactly. You can use the net force pulling down. You can use the net force kind of pulling on the system and then apply that as an acceleration to the entire system. Absolutely. And that's perfectly fine. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm kind of very pedagogically going through this. And as a matter of fact, I need to point out the sign error because I did make a sign error here. When I drew this here, that acceleration was pointed in the positive x direction. But this acceleration here should be pointed in the negative y direction. And so I made a sign mistake here. So there needs to be a plus sign down there. That sign there, this goes there, this goes there. That becomes a plus sign there, and that becomes a plus sign there. This is exactly the same thing as Stephanie was just saying, as a matter of fact, because what I can do is I can apply the force of the pull, that m2g, on the entire system, which is a total mass of M1 plus M2, and figure out the tension from there. So you can almost see that shortcut in this final answer. But you gotta be very careful about the signs, and I was cavalier about the signs, which I shouldn't have been. Did that answer your question, Stephanie, at least? Because it got to an answer that's consistent with your insight as well. So there are several different ways to do it. The part B here, okay, the work done on the 20 Newton block total, right, work is the force times the displacement times the cosine of the angle between them. Here theta is equal to 0 degrees, right? The force is in the direction of the displacement for the 20 Newton block, at least. And so the net force applied to that 20 Newton block over that distance gives you the tension, because that's the force acting on the block. It's the tension times that distance is the total work on block one. That's the 20 Newton block. And the same thing goes for the 12 Newton block, where now the force is, okay, the net force, if I'm calculating out the net force as pointing up, but the displacement is down, the angle is actually 180 degrees. The tension minus m2g times the cosine of 180 degrees is the net force, the net work done on 2. Right? Times the displacement, still at delta x. this 180 degrees is there because I'm counting the tension up as being positive and the M2G as being negative, but the displacement is negative, right? So I'm so that cosine 180 degrees is that angle between those two. I could also just say M2G
minus the tension
pointed in the same direction as the displacement, and then have the cosine of zero. I'd end up with the same answer, right? And then the total work done on the system is just add them all together. And the total work on the system, you can figure out the total net final velocity through the same trick as I did before, right? Where did all that energy go? It had to go in the kinetic energy of the system. There's no other place for it to go except gravitational potential energy here and kinetic energy of the blocks. And you can use conservation of energy to solve for the final velocities of both blocks to go, knowing that they have to be the same. That's problem 6.98. The key thing here is it's very easy, that's why I warned you in the notes, it's very easy to fall into the trap of just saying, oh, that's just 12 newtons. No, not when the system's moving. Just like the elevator cable is not the weight of the elevator if the elevator is accelerating up or down. Same thing here. Another request? Yeah. 8.27?
Chapter 8?
No, it's
in the homework.
Yeah, let's see. 8.27. There you go. Conservation of momentum. Here you go. Okay, two ice skaters are practicing. Daniel stops to tie a shoelace, and while at rest is struck by Rebecca. So Daniel is sitting here, poor ice skater Daniel, and Rebecca skates into him. There's, after the collision, Rebecca has, so this is the before picture. And then the after picture, Rebecca's skating off at an angle of 53.1 degrees. They are very precise about Rebecca's angle. And Daniel is struck off in some direction there. He's flying tonight on a plane, I think. So this is after, or the final. Okay. And Rebecca's initial velocity, we know there are masses. The mass of Rebecca is 45 kilograms. The mass of Daniel is 65 kilograms. The Rebecca's initial velocity is 13 meters a second. And
And Rebecca's final velocity is 8 meters per second. So far, so good. And where the magnitude and direction of Daniel's velocity after...
So theta, that theta is theta r, let's say, for theta Rebecca. And what is Daniel's final velocity? What is the angle of Daniel going off?
Those are the questions put to us. This is kind of a classic movie problem, right? You can imagine setting this up and having a puck of 45 grams and another puck of 65 grams and hitting them at these angles and figuring out exactly where things go from there. And you notice that certainly this is an inelastic collision. Partly because you are not told anything about conservation of energy in this problem. You're not told it's elastic. Two people banging into each other, one is going to push on the other. They're going to do things with energy, right? It's not like two perfect little pucks that are absolutely bouncy ball elastic or anything like that. So you pretty much have to assume in a problem like this that all you got is conservation of momentum. The conservation of momentum gets you everything you need, right? You're asking for two quantities out of the final system, and conservation of momentum is going to give you two equations. For the x and the y. So the initial, let's draw our coordinate systems again. Let's say that's x and that's y. The initial momentum in the x system is just the mass of Rebecca times her initial velocity, which is all known. Daniel's at rest. And the final momentum of this system is the mass of Rebecca times now the component of the momentum in the x direction here, which is her mass times her velocity, v Rebecca final x plus the mass of Daniel times the velocity of Daniel final x. Rebecca final, the horizontal component here, so ka to it's the adjacent, so it's the cosine. So this is the cosine of theta r plus the mass of Daniel times the velocity of Daniel final times the cosine of theta Daniel. Okay. Setting those two equal, mass of the Rebecca, velocity of the Rebecca initial. That's one equation there. The p initial in the y direction is just zero. Nobody's moving in the y direction initially at all. And the p final in the y direction is the mass of Rebecca and the velocity of Rebecca final in the y direction plus the mass of Daniel times the velocity of Daniel final in the y direction. One of these is positive, one of these is negative. Velocity of Rebecca final times the sine of Rebecca theta, theta r. Now, that's positive. This component is negative for Daniel. Mass of Daniel times the velocity of Daniel final and the sine of theta Daniel. Okay? And that's equal to zero
Right, I put that in there. I put this in there. Physics is done, right? You'll get a smiley face if you write that in the appropriate place on your exam. Not extra credit, but a smiley face at least. Two equations, two unknowns, right? Velocity of Daniel Final is in here. And the angle of theta for Daniel is in there as well. You know all these other numbers. You know the mass of Rebecca. You know Rebecca's final velocity and Rebecca's initial velocity, et cetera, et cetera. So you can solve those two equations with two unknowns. Yeah?
Instead of solving two equations with two unknowns, you can just solve for the x and y components of the angle of final velocity. Use that to find the magnitude of the velocity of the angle.
So you're asking if I can just find the net total velocity, find Daniel's final velocity.
Right, so it looks like the final of x, right?
Right.
Solve for Daniel's final velocity in the x direction, right?
Sure.
You have all of the other terms.
Right.
You get his x component, you do the same thing for the y component.
Right.
And then you can use the two components to find the magnitude.
Right.
You can use the two components to find the angle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure, sure. That's in some sense exactly what you're doing by solving these. You're absolutely right, yeah. So in solving this for two equations, two unknowns, what was really suggested is, okay, here, what this really is this really is the x component of Daniel's momentum, right? And this is the y component of Daniel's momentum. Oops, dy. Right? So, in having, you can solve this, you know all the other numbers, so you can really solve for the x component of Daniel's final momentum. You know all the other numbers here, so you can really solve for the y component of Daniel's final momentum here. Right? Given those two momenta, you can figure out the magnitude of his final momentum and then figure out his velocity. And you can also, by taking an inverse tangent of the ratio, figure out the angle from there. That's a perfectly good way, that's a great way of solving, you know, kind of solving these two equations and two unknowns. Rather than having to manipulate the velocities and the angles. That sets that up. And then there's a question about how the kinetic energies differ. Now that you know the final velocities of both of them, you can figure out the difference in kinetic energies from the beginning to the end. And that's how much energy Daniel used probably in shoving Rebecca out of the way and grousing at her for half an hour or something like that. This is 8.27, let's see. Changing the total kinetic energy of the two skaters after the collision. That's just accounting once you have the velocities and using the definition of kinetic energy. Did that answer the question for this one?
The average response time for emergency services.
No emergency services necessary. They just kick each other around. Rebecca and Daniel are perfectly reasonable units. So let's take a break for about 10 minutes. Let's come back at 20 after. And then if you've got any other questions, that's great. Otherwise, I'll wax prosaic about center of mass for a little while. So let's come back at 20 after. Yeah.
Can you go over the last problem?
The girl on the trampoline?
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. There's let's see, the girl on the trampoline. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll write that one down to work through.
Not a girl on a train. A girl on the tramp. I shouldn't write girl on tramp, though. That's probably not politically. I don't know. There's
Yeah, that's fine. Either way works. Yeah, absolutely.
Once you have the components, you can do a bunch of different ways, right? You can either use Pythagoras and square it.
You can find the angle first
and then use the angle to project one of those back into the hypotenuse of the magnitude. Either way is fine. Yep. Hey.
So,
Because in a lot of these, the angle is 180 degrees.
So you don't necessarily need it.
So for that, as long as it's clear to you that that angle is, you know, but be aware that there are other problems where that angle is not 180 or 90, and then you have to be careful on using the angle.
Okay. I just want to make sure people like this one. I found as the acceleration of the system, and that's why I got the tension.
Sure.
And I found the work done on the 21 was 9. And then I did gravity, and then I just subtracted the work from gravity times minus the.
That's
fine to do it that way, too.
And in the exam, as long as you write out your reasoning, then you can just write down the answer.
Okay. All right.
But you're ahead of the game. You're taking shortcuts than the experience versus us.
Thank you.
Sure.
Should it be cosine? I've got like.
I thought it'd be cosine, but sine
cosine. Yeah, for a 45 degree angle, it's probably. I would not be surprised if it's a typo. If that is the. So here. So the sum of the forces, Well, the sine of 45 degrees of this is T2 times the sine of 45 degrees. The vertical component here, T2, is the sine. So the cosine of 32 for the friction is really coming from the normal plus, right? Because let's draw it out. So the normal force is really mg from cosine of 32 degrees. So the force of friction is really the normal force times that coefficient of friction, which is basically staying at the off of 1 degrees. That angle
is coming from the angle of the
beach. But then, the force of friction is here. And yes, the displacement is here. So we're figuring out the work. Which is the force of friction times the displacement. The angle is going to be 85. So that, which is a negative one. And then you're going back there. But that 32 degrees is coming from the normal friction, not from the angle between the.
Yeah, it's the normal.
That's why I tell you guys always just draw the triangle. Don't memorize that the x component is, you know, that the x component is always because here the way this triangle is drawn, the x component here. But you have to draw the triangle. Okay? And the only reason the x component is because I'm here is because you drew the triangle.
You know,
think of it this way. If you drew the triangle that way, the x component would be the so it all depends on how you draw the triangle. And then you have to switch the sign, which is fine. Right? But you have to be careful to switch the sign when you do that, because you're not going to get the sign for free by taking the cosine of it. Because that is the angle factor. And what I'm doing is I'm just blindly saying, right, the work is equal to the force times the displacement times the cosine of the angle. And these two things are vectors, and delta x points in that direction, and the force in this case, which is in the direction. You're also absolutely right. You could take a component,
right?
And if I take a component of this and then take the angle in between, that's perfectly fine too. It still works. And what you're doing is you're in fact even being a little smart. You're saying, aha, I know the perpendicular component does no work, and only the parallel does work. So that's fine as long as you're just careful about the signs. Because the signs, you know, do sometimes end up in the actual.
Hey!
Because I was going over the slides yesterday.
Within the system, at least, this is actually critical to why conservation momentum works. Is because when two things balance against each other, they both hit each other exactly. So they both have an equal mass through that period when they're. So this is still a pretty good universal practice. It's one of those laws that still works. But you have to just be really careful and say the equinox of course is when you're talking about two different things in the system, you're talking about the force of this guy on this guy equal to the force of this guy on this guy. They're like two friends talking to each other.
This
more general equation is useful if the force is changing or if the angle is changing as the thing moves, right? Because then this force becomes a function of that distance,
and you're integrating, you can do a little bit of CS. Right. Or if the angle is a function of the distance, then you're integrating back CS. Right. So this is a much more general statement. I'm not complicating your problems for you guys to that, but understanding that this is truly in a real calculus, not just a calculus, your energy system is the integral of F dot dx. You didn't have to use that. All you have to use would be work is equal to F dx.
And I have another question. I don't remember which one I was doing it on. I think I might have done that. But I didn't say you like draw the box like this way. And that's how you find
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're consistent drawing your triangle, the triangle is not really this.
I draw my triangles like that precisely because I always draw the edges of the triangles parallel to these two lines. Right? If I want that 90 degrees to be like the outline. Some people who are not polyhedral sometimes try and draw the triangle like that. And that's wrong because that 90 degrees is
needs to be like the axis.
And whenever I'm drawing a triangle, I just draw a triangle to make sure that my 90 degrees is the same as my 90 degrees in my coordinates. I can look at my triangle and I still have a figure. But it all. Hey, Jimmy, make it quick. What's up?
Let's work out through that one. It works for all of them. Or you can just snap a picture and send it to me. I'll check it out. Okay,
yeah, sure. Okay. There was a quick request to work through the last homework problem. I almost wrote down a girl on tramp and then decided that was politically incorrect. So this is the girl on the trampoline problem, not the girl on tramp problem. So we have a guy holding a box. And we have a girl on a trampoline here. And she's going to grab the box. M1, M2. This height is H. She is M1, the box is M2. She is bouncing up with an initial velocity of V sub I. So this is the last homework problem in this set, the girl on the trampoline. The mass of the girl is 60 kilograms. The mass of the box is 15 kilograms. The height is 2 meters. And her initial velocity is 8 meters per second.
Okay, and they
even tell you use g equals 9.80 meters per second squared for the
acceleration of gravity. So far, so good. So this is the girl on the trampoline. That's the kind of the setup of the problem. And then whether they ask of the problem what is her velocity when she grabs the box. So you got a girl bouncing up on a trampoline at some height, she's gonna grab this box, right? So you've got, even if she doesn't grab the box, just what's her height at 2 meters? We could do that with kinematics even. And this is the velocity before she grabs the box, her velocity after she grabs the box. And then it's going to ask me some other things. So let's see. So her initial velocity is 8 meters per second. Her height is 2 meters. We could do this with kinematics. We could do this with conservation of energy. Which way do you want me to do it? Conservation of energy. There you go. Sorry, we got a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, okay? The conservation of energy for part A. So initially, let's say your height is equal to zero. So, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up my little energy table again, right? Where I've got her total energy initial and total energy final. And there are only two types of energy in the system. There's kinetic energy and potential energy due to gravity. Her initial kinetic energy is 1/2 m1 vi squared. Let's call this thing vf, oh gosh, vf1, right? And her final kinetic energy is 1/2 mvf1 squared. She's potentially still moving when she grabs the box. You don't know.
If her initial height is zero, her initial potential energy
due to gravity is zero.
Her final energy, kinetic energy due to gravity, is mgh. And this is m1. So I can set up my little conservation of energy thing and say 1/2 right, 1/2 m1 vi squared is equal to 1/2 m1 vf1 squared plus m1 gh. Right, so all of those masses cancel out. Doesn't matter what her mass is, but her final velocity is equal to the square root now of vi squared minus gh.
And let's plug in the numbers real quick just so I can verify that number is correct. So this is the square root of vi squared, which is 8 meters per second, minus 9.8 meters per second squared times the height, which is 2 meters. So I got 6.6. I'm going to plug this into my mastering over here quick just to make sure that I got that right. 6.7. Is that right? Let's see.
I think
there's a 2.
Minus
2. There's a 2. Thank you. I knew I was going to forget that 2, too. That was the annoying thing. I somehow knew I was going to forget that, too. So it's 5,
right? 4.9, 5 meters per second.
Is that better? Let's see. Yeah, okay, that's better. Yeah, that too, you gotta be careful about that too, and you're shortcutting that stuff. So that's how you do the first part there. Second part, gotta use what?
Conservation of momentum, right? And the her initial momentum is her mass times her velocity here, Vf1. And let's say that's Vf2. And her final momentum with the box is m1 plus m2 times vf2. So if she's grabbing the box, she's got to slow down to grab the box. So that means that her final velocity is her initial velocity, vf1, times her mass divided by her mass plus the mass of the box.
And so let's plug that in. Multiply that number times the ratio of her mass, 60 kilograms, divided by 60 plus 15 kilograms.
And she goes down an entire meter per second.
Jumping up, and as she grabs that box, like, slow down. Let's plug that in. And
some of her velocity brings the box up to her speed.
Absolutely. She exerts energy, accelerating that box up to her speed, and she uses some of her kinetic energy slowing that thing down. Okay? And because she's exerting that energy, is the collision elastic or inelastic? She's using up energy, right, to grab that box and lift it and accelerate it with her body and pushing it down. So the collision's got to be, you know, inelastic.
Some of that kinetic energy was lost because she had kinetic energy here, and that kinetic energy ends up being lost as she accelerates the box. Put into that box. So
and then part D, what's the maximum height that she reaches? And let's, instead of doing it the kinematics way, let's do it the conservation of energy way again. Okay. Well, let's say initially here, okay, her max height. Now we can look at a different little energy problem here, a different energy box. And here's the grab, and here's the top. And here's her kinetic energy, and here's her potential energy due to gravity and the total. So her kinetic energy
here is 1/2, you know, she's carrying the box, so it's both masses together. And there's that VF2. Squared, this 3.98 meters per second squared in there. Yeah, one. There's this is the V top, which we don't know. Actually, at the top, what's her velocity?
Zero.
So what's this term? Zero. Okay. Her potential energy at the top, let's say we're trying to figure out how far she goes above the top of the trampoline. So here she's already, you know, if we put zero at the surface of the trampoline, here she's already at m1 plus m2 gh, right? She's already up in the air by h. And let's say this is m1 plus m2 gh max, which we're trying to figure out, right? Because all of her kinetic energy goes into total height energy. So we can add those up, and we can add that up, and make those equal together. And we can figure out, gosh, all of these masses now cancel out. And what I'm going to get is I'm going to get from all of this here is that the H max is equal to what? This is equal to the sum of those. All of the masses canceled out. The G divides out, so it's going to be equal to H plus 1/2 VF squared over G. VF2 squared over G. That's what setting those two equal together and solving for H max is. If I plug that in real quick and figure out, okay, there's my final velocity, 3.98. 3.98 squared divided by 2 times that 9.8 plus the original height of 2 meters is 2.8 meters. She goes all the way up, almost another meter above where she grabbed the box. Let's plug that answer in and see if it works. Yay! Significant figures feedback, though, at least that worked. So this is great, right? You don't need to use kinematics to do a lot of the stuff that you might need to feel you use kinematics for. Yeah, I know, I do the wiggly hand thing. I like it, you know, so... There's all you have to do is use conservation of energy, and you can often find final velocities. And in fact, that equation, V final squared is equal to V initial squared plus 2G delta X, that you learn from kinematics, well, if you multiply through by a mass and divide by 2, it actually is exactly the conservation of energy equation. So, no surprise that you can do a bunch of the kinematics without having to actually do the kinematics. So, be ready if you have any questions before the exam. Email me, I will respond. Otherwise, bring computers or cell phones, laptops, whatever you need. You cannot call a friend, however. Back to work.